upcoming Metro West development. One of my biggest concerns about Metro West is the planned height of the buildings, 11 buildings from 8 to 14 stories high. Even the developers' drawings show them towering above the homes all around, our own included. One of the tallest buildings, 150 feet, an office building, will sit partially on the 3.75 acres that you are planning to sell to the developer. Why could you not lease this land instead? You have done this with 7 acres at the Dunloring Metro Station. At least you might then be able to exert some leverage on the developer, who has shown little appetite for listening to citizens thus far. I attended the November 1st forum at Oakton High School, and thank you for holding that forum. Many of us were not able to speak. Questions were asked then at the forum, but also in written form since that meeting, to which there have been no answers. Please do not vote on this decision until those questions have been answered. Otherwise, this whole process seems to me to be a charade, like a theater production whose ending has been predetermined all along.
Thank you, Angela. Our next speaker is Samuel Jordan, and the subject is the Benning Road Station development.
Thank you. I'm Sam Jordan, representing Community First at Benning Metro. Community First at Benning Metro is a committee of community residents living near the Benning Road Metro Rail Station. We need your help in halting the construction of a 5-story building at the station. Upon learning of this project, we began to inquire about the appropriate planning process and the various standards that should be applied, and we conclude that the communities served by the Benning Road Metro Rail Station have enjoyed neither the communication nor the consideration we have every right to expect from WMATA and its development partners. What are our communities to conclude when we see the community forums conducted by WMATA recently for its projects and communities at the Vienna Metro Rail Station and in Tyson's Corner, both in Northern Virginia? Where are the design charrettes, visiting sessions, community forums for Benning Metro communities? Are we describing the elementary components of disparate treatment? The responses of our council member, the advisory neighborhood commissions, and the residents themselves should satisfy any inquiry into the achievement of transit-oriented development goal 6, policies and people, local government and community contact. Local government and communities in the Benning Metro area have rejected the project without qualification. Even Marshall Heights Community Development Organization, one of the project's co-developers, has reversed its own position on the project, declaring that it, quote, agrees with Community First that the Benning Metro site is not adequate to support the proposed office building, end quote. If this is the position of Ward 7's preeminent community development organization, in light of its experience, its ties to the affected communities, and its record of collaboration with WMATA, can WMATA itself take any other position? We urge WMATA to halt this project that cannot benefit or improve its property at Benning Metro, nor the communities in the vicinity, and withdraw forthwith its request for exceptions in BZA application number 17304. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is Laura Olson, subject Land Sale Vienna.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Laura Olson. I'm the Assistant Director of the Coalition for Smarter Growth, a regional group in the Washington area. And the Coalition for Smarter Growth supports the sale of the land at the Vienna Metro Station for incorporation into the Metro West mixed-use project, which has received approvals from Fairfax County. As Stuart Schwartz, our Executive Director, noted at WMATA's November 1st hearing, we recognize that our region is growing. We believe the key is responsibly managing that growth. Putting new housing, jobs, and services at metro stations designed for people to have real travel choices, we believe, is the best option for everyone. We want to thank WMATA for its participation in the development and the review of this project over the past few years. WMATA-owned land at metro stations is a critical part of ensuring true transit-oriented development. The Metro West project, as you know, is reviewed by a local task force and separately by the Smart Growth Alliance Recognition Jury. And the Fairfax County Planning Staff, the Planning Commission, and the Board of Supervisors have approved the comprehensive plan amendment for the development. We encourage WMATA to support the local land use approvals at this station, which included consideration of the WMATA-owned land. We recognize that some concerns over traffic still exist, but we believe the modifications resulting from the hard work of Supervisor Smith, the Planning Commissioner, staff, community groups, citizens, have produced a well-designed project. With the additional requirements for traffic management and retail, we believe this mixed-use, walkable project will reduce car traffic significantly compared to typical large projects in Fairfax. Moving forward, we do believe that Fairfax and Virginia need to work with WMATA to provide even more local transit options to the stations and to Tyson's Corner. We know that the biggest traffic generators are scattered single-use developments. That's why we believe the Metro West project with this location and design is a step in the right direction. We believe WMATA is making a good decision for Fairfax County and for the region in selling a portion of its land to ensure a well-designed, truly transit-oriented development. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last speaker for public comment is Richard Bachner. His topic, again, Vienna Sale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. It's nice to be back here at Metro. And for all of you who don't know me, I'm Richard J. Bachner. I live across the street from the Vienna station at Virginia Center. I also ride the Orange Line frequently, almost every day. I chaired the Fairleigh Metro West Citizens Work Group, and I'm here today representing my homeowners association, Virginia Center Phase 2, to speak in support of the proposed sale of the WMATA property at the Vienna station. I strongly support the Metro West development proposed for the Fairleigh-Sweeney tract on the south side of Vienna Station. So does my HOA. So did more than half the speakers who signed up to speak at the November 1 Metro Forum on the proposed property sale that many of you attended. It's the right project for our region and our neighborhood. We're very much looking forward to the amenities this project is going to bring to our community. Incorporating the Metro property into the Metro West project is critical for the development of a successful transit-oriented development. It will allow the creation of a safe, effective, and attractive connection between the station and Metro West. Some seek to delay the sale for a variety of reasons. Frankly, these claims are generally baseless. Let's take transportation, for instance. The project's opponents have long claimed that the Metro West project will overwhelm the roads in Metro. That's simply false. At the forum, Jim Hughes assured us that with the ongoing improvement program, the Metro Rail system will have sufficient capacity to accommodate the Metro West generated ridership increase. The traffic studies done to date show conclusively that with the planned roadway improvements and the TDM trip reduction requirements set forth in a comprehensive plan, the road network can accommodate the increased traffic demand generated by the Metro West project. This conclusion is shared by the Fairfax County Department of Transportation. From Metro's perspective, the property sale is an obvious financial windfall for WMATA. $6.5 million for an all but worthless piece of property, $9 million worth of developer-provided improvements. This deal is an example of public-private cooperation at its best. Delaying this action further will accomplish nothing. I urge you all to approve this project, this property sale today. Thank you very much.
Mr. Bachner, that concludes our list of speakers. Do any of my colleagues wish to comment? Yes, Ms. Hudgens.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I was not here to hear all of the comments, but I want to thank the speakers for coming, and I want to welcome the Mayor Seaman here. Glad to see her here. I would like to ask that the record be checked for the questions that were raised. Ms. Elliott indicated that there were unanswered questions from the Metro meeting, and I would like to make sure that the record is checked, and if she would let me know, I would really like to find out what unanswered questions there are.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. Anyone else? We'll proceed now to the report by the General Manager, Chief Executive Officer. I see White here, but I don't see Mr. White. Mr. Barton, will you please give us the report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have in front of you the board digest, and I'm really only going to highlight one item from the digest. As you recall, last month we had the third-place team that won in Dallas at the bus rodeo, and I'm pleased to report to you that those same individuals won the most recent competition that we had on October 22nd. Robert Miles won his 17th Metro Bus Operator Winner Award, and the maintenance team of Truck Hong, William Morgan, and Loxie McKenzie again won for the maintenance team. And I did want to thank Mr. Deegan, who was present at the rodeo. That concludes my report, but I'll answer any questions you might have.
Questions from my colleagues?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, I would like to note, Mr. Bartlett, and I reserved my usual ire on this issue since you're sitting in the chair and Mr. Weiss is not here today. But in terms of the activities of the general manager over the past month since we've met last, there was a hearing in Annapolis where the general manager testified before a legislative committee in Annapolis. And I just think that our management continues to miss the message when dealing with the issues that are on the table regarding dedicated funding, the Davis bill, Inspector General, and how that is presented in the legislative forum. Specifically, I thought when we last left this issue that we noted that the funding mechanism and the idea of dedicated funding was an immediate concern, but particularly with regard to handling it in the state of Virginia and dealing with the authority lines that exist between Richmond and Northern Virginia, and as far as to identify what mechanisms there are for dedicated funding in Virginia, that Maryland and the district have kind of schematically put out there what possibilities there might be for dedicated funding. The testimony in Annapolis, though, as I understand it, left that little part off about in Virginia. And I think has raised a lot of concerns at this point that we want to make very clear that from our perspective, with regard to dedicated funding, that it in and of itself is not the paramount issue, that it needs to be a part of a larger package that absolutely must include the Inspector General issue as an independent authority agency, and we believe should be established in the compact. And the two are very linked. We don't see it as going forward with dedicated funding and that train going down the track and not having the Inspector General component. The Inspector General component is absolutely necessary. And I understand that you probably cannot answer since the general manager is not there, but we have a real question in terms of, was it edifying to receive some of the questions from members of the General Assembly from outside of our region relative to the amount of funding that comes to Metro? And as I understand it, the way they were asked and proffered, there was a great deal of surprise at the large amount of funding that this agency receives from the state of Maryland. And therefore, there's a sensitivity that is required on management that still hasn't sunk in terms of how it presents things to the various committees, and in terms of the message it is trying to deliver, because you're going to find that it's very difficult to not keep in mind the fact that the state of Maryland, unlike most other states, is responsible for funding two transit systems. And that dollar value must be kept in balance, and that has to be kept in mind when you go make these presentations. And I think that from the reports I have, you may well have caused more damage to the issue than good in terms of the presentation that management has made out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And one of the things you touched on, Virginia, and maybe Mr. Zimmerman might care to add a comment or two, we certainly are beginning to get our ducks in a row for seeking dedicated funding, looking ahead to this upcoming session of the General Assembly. And certainly in earlier discussions, I can't remember which committee it was at, but I had already asked our staff here to look at what actions we might be able to take, independent of a compact amendment, to just go ahead with the type of changes that have been outlined in pending legislation for creating that Inspector General position here at Metro. Chris, do you wish to augment that?
Yes. You know, I think back, Mr. Chairman, a couple of years ago, well, three, 4 years ago, whenever it was, when as we began facing transportation funding crises, or well, as I should say, as we began talking about transportation funding crises, not necessarily facing it, we had, you know, a lot of hand-wringing and discussion about, you know, how we would get funding. And it seemed that whenever it came to actual real, really doing something or making a decision about what you might do to actually raise revenue, there was always something to be talked about that was something other than raising revenue. So we wound up with proposals for what we needed was a new authority. You know, we need a new transportation authority. And we can, you can use up a year or two arguing about whether that should be region-wide for the three jurisdictions. And then when you, you know, realize that that's not feasible, then you can talk about it just in one state. So we did that. Then we actually had a commission, which I got to serve on, to develop a new authority for Northern Virginia. You know, because then we had to do that before we could talk about the money. And in the end, we wound up with an authority and no money. So we now have an authority I serve on that would be very powerful if there were any funds, but there aren't. You know, this really is about money, and it really is about the funding we need. And there will be lots of other things you can talk about. There are important issues, but they can all be excuses to not talk about funding, and I'm afraid that's what tends to happen. I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. Role of separate auditor, and you know, you call it inspector general because that sounds good, I guess, but some kind of separate audit function that is outside the general manager, I think, is a good structure. I've always thought so, and I agree with you that we ought to do that, and we don't need to wait for this whole issue to be resolved. I don't think we need to wait for a compact amendment. I think we can do it, and we ought to do it, but that's a separate issue. We have to face up to the difficult question of how we are going to raise more money and in all likelihood, what taxes that will involve, because that's how we raise money in government. If it were possible to do through some other mechanism, we would already be doing it. And that's unpleasant, and you know, nobody wants to raise any taxes, and people who run for office like I do prefer not to have to do that. But the reality is things fall apart if you don't eventually face that. And that's what we've been trying to get the region to face up to, and I'm heartened by the fact that people across the region, from the general public to elected officials, are beginning to face up to that reality. In Virginia, I am hopeful, not at all certain, but hopeful that there will be agreement at least among those of us in Northern Virginia that are involved in the Metro Compact on an approach that would get us something, and that we can then go to our General Assembly and our governor and say, you know, here's the approach we want to take. Any other issues I think we should be proceeding with to do what we need to do, but I don't think we should put off the discussion of what revenues we need and how we're going to raise them until we've figured out every other thing that might be thought of that could be related that we ought to do, every other possible reform, because we'll never get there then. It's hard enough. It's going to be tough enough to work something through in each jurisdiction on the revenue side as it is, and that ultimately is the real determinant of whether we're successful or not, because if the resources aren't there, all the reforms in the world aren't going to make things better. The biggest problem we have, and we may have you know, a number of different problems that need to be addressed, and we've been trying to address many of them, but the biggest problem we have is insufficient resources, and nobody should be allowed to kind of escape the issue by being distracted by other things and avoiding the reality that if we don't pay for it, it's not going to work, and it's going to fall apart, and we've known that for some time, and that's the way it is. That's my thought.
Okay, Ms. Mack, then Mr. Linton.
I'm going to change the subject, so if Mr. Linton is on the same subject.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I didn't know that my first day back that I would happen to be at the board meeting where we engage in one of my favorite topics, and that is how do we raise money for a transit agency? Having been one who've experienced that in a legislative body where, in fact, we did come up with dedicated funding for public transportation, always know that there always will be some reform matters that will prop up during the course of those discussions. The one that I was engaged in intimately, we did, in fact, create new board positions so that the governor and the legislature could have more oversight over the opportunities that will present themselves as a result of the new revenues. So those kind of things will happen. But the critical issues, as Mrs. Zimmerman suggested, is the one of revenues. That is the one in which all of the major discussions and the major roadblocks continue to exist. And those discussions, unfortunately, you can't start them earlier enough because what the ultimate solution will be one in which will be one of compromise, will be one in which the legislature and the governors will come to some agreement on. We don't know what that is now. for any of us to sit around this table to suggest that we do, then we are definitely misguided. That's going to come by way of the process, but the process must get started, and it must get started with hearings, with people coming together, looking at the options, and coming together around a common agreement on how to go forward. Those details of what the oversight will be, how that will be formulated, that will come about through the process. But we need to get the discussions and the debate started, not only in Virginia in the district, but also in Maryland. And I think that needs to take place. You can't walk away from it. You can't hide it. It's here, and we need to deal with it.
Anyone else on this topic? Mr. Smith.
I think it's instructive to look that in the end game, beyond the reforms that Mr. Linton referred to, beyond dedicated funding, and all that that was supposed to mean for the system I think he alludes to, they just endured a strike a few weeks ago over a labor agreement that they can't fund and are having very much difficulty funding their system still, in spite of all of those reforms and in spite of dedicated funding itself. I think that along with the picture that folks are painting out there, that it needs to be noted that dedicated funding in and of itself is not a panacea for this or any other organization in this country. It's another finger in the dike, as it were, that there will, even if we achieve the goal, there will come a day not too far beyond that great achievement that we'll all celebrate with media events and photos and press lines. There will come a day where we're all begging for money again in the local jurisdictions and in the capitals of the states bordering the system. And at that point, I'm not sure what we say when they ask us, well, we gave you dedicated funding for the system. That was supposed to cure the deal, was it not? And at that point in time, I'm not sure what we say.
Well, shall we do one last? Mr. Lynn, you have the final word.
Unfortunately, my colleague, Mr. Smith, often starts off with half information. When you're not there and you know all the details and you read what's in the newspapers, you don't know all the information. Quite frankly, the dedicated funding in the state of Pennsylvania, one of the problems with it is that one of the dedicated source of funds was the oil franchise tax, which was eliminated a year or two after the bill was passed, and that void was never created. So the amount of funds and yield, which was anticipated from the dedicated funding, never reached its actual total. Healthcare cost benefits are something that every industry across this nation is struggling. We had the, I'm not going to get into political debate on that. So to suggest that anyone at this point in this country has a solution for healthcare costs, and that that's not going to be a negotiated item in any contract, not only private sector as well as public sector, is ludicrous. So we can have a debate off-site, Mr. Smith, whenever you want to on those matters. I'm prepared and ready, but the point of the matter is that this system needs money, and everybody's in agreement about that.
Okay. Well, Mayor Seaman, we did this to prove to you that we are not a lockstep board. Now we will turn to reports.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Mrs. Mack.
Okay, I would like to shift gears, so
yes,
to speak.
Mrs. Mack.
We did not have a discussion on our town hall meeting that we had in the District of Columbia,
yes, ma'am.
And I think it's worthy of a few comments. This town hall meeting was the final meeting of the year, fulfilling our commitment to have a town hall meeting in each of the three states. I was unable to attend the meeting in Virginia, but it was very interesting to me that the meeting in Maryland and in the District of Columbia focused very much on bus service. Mm-hmm. The meeting in Maryland was almost exclusively on bus service, which was a little bit to my surprise. And of course, at the district last week, we had a great deal of discussion about bus service, and we are all familiar with some of those bus lines that always keep coming up with a lot of complaints, the 70s, the 71s, the 30s, the 32s, and so on. And it seems to me that we might want to look at creating regional bus managers, the way we have created regional rail managers. That might help the customers get a little bit closer to the people who make the decisions, and it could give us the same kind of opportunity to improve efficiency on the bus that we anticipate on the rail. So I just throw that out there and ask that management really take a look at how we can address in some systemic way the complaints we keep hearing on the buses. One of the issues in the district has always been the bunching of buses, and we know that it's an urban area with lots of traffic, but we really need to find some solutions, and perhaps looking at creating this regional capacity could help us to help to move us in that direction. So I just offer that comment.
Thank you, Ms. Mack. Anyone else? Okay, we'll turn to the reports by the Planning and Development Committee. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Planning and Development Committee met on November 3rd and has three items for your consideration. The first was the ongoing rail car capacity analysis, in which staff had requested approval for the phase two of the program that we began last spring, testing different rail car configurations. In the ensuing time since the initial phase, a lot of data has been collected based on what's the existing situation on the rail cars. And we had a citizen rider committee that worked with staff and developed a number of alternatives to be used in the phase two portion that will involve different seating configurations, different amounts of seats in the cars, different handholds, and so on. Came up with a number of interesting recommendations to be tested, including different types of flip-down seats, straps to hold on to, such as are used in other systems that we've not used here. And these would be the subject of testing on, I believe, altogether. It's 16 cars, I think. The matter is within the budget of the original scoped project. I would note that this item was heard and forwarded by both the Planning and Development and Budget Committees. So the item in your agenda for item 6A, this one, and on the Budget Committee for item 7B is actually the exact same item and action. So the board clearly doesn't have to do this twice. With the concurrence of the Budget Committee Chair, Mrs. Mack, I'm offering it under report here since it came up first, basically. And so the action is to proceed with a phase two study and proceed with the testing of reconfigured rail car interiors and use the remaining balance of the original rail car enhancement program. And on behalf of the committee and the Budget Committee, I'm offering it and move it for your approval.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Mack. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. The motion carries. Mr. Zimmerman.
Item B is basically a request for to conduct a public hearing. It's a proposed expansion of the Alexandria Yard to accommodate more rail cars. This is a reimbursable project. This also will appear on the Budget Committee, but it's a different action on the Budget Committee agenda than this one here. There is a resolution that is attached to your in your docket that would authorize the GM and staff to assess the potential impact and environmental effects of proposed changes at the yard and so on, and to conduct a hearing. And on behalf of the Planning and Development Committee, I move its approval.
Motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Mack. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Final item is the approval of the request for approval of a resolution that would initiate a competitive selection process for a technology partnership for an integrated customer communication system. The committee discussed the proposed pilot to test an integrated customer communication system. The staff presented a schedule of deliverables that would result from this competitive procurement process. And as is set forth in the resolution that's attached, Staff seeks the approval to initiate this process to solicit industry interest in one or more technology partnerships and to qualify a number of bidders that will develop and submit the detailed proposals in response to a request for proposals, and then to establish the best value among the bidders responding to the RFP. Staff will return to the board for award of the contract. On behalf of the committee, I move approval.
Motion, do we have a second?
Second.
Second again by Mrs. Mack. Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries.
That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. For our next report, we'll shift to the Budget Committee and Mrs. Mack. Oh, do you want? Are you ready, Mr. Graham?
Mm-hmm.
We'll go ahead with Mr. Graham and the report by the Real Estate Committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The Real Estate Committee met in executive session on November the 3rd and voted to recommend board consideration of the following items. First, approval of the developer selection and the term sheet for the Morgan Boulevard Joint Development Site. On July 28, 2004, WMATA issued a joint development solicitation which offered the Morgan Boulevard Metro Rail Station site for joint development. WMATA received two proposals. After a thorough evaluation of both proposals, staff recommended the designation of Garrett Morgan Boulevard Joint Venture as the selected developer. Garrett Morgan Boulevard Development Joint Venture is composed of Centex Homes, one of the largest home builders in the United States, Structures Unlimited, Inc., minority-owned local land development and construction firm, and Stepping Stones Unlimited, a minority-owned local land development and construction firm. The developer will construct 945 condominiums and 84 townhouses for a total of 1,029 units and 120,000 square feet of retail space and 153,000 square feet of office space. It will also reconfigure and replace all WMATA facilities on the site, including consolidating the WMATA surface parking spaces into a parking structure. The selection of this team has been coordinated with Prince George's County. Move approval.
Second.
The motion and a second by Mr. Deegan. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye.
Second item is approval of a joint development agreement amendment incorporating revised sale lease terms for the Twin Brook Joint Development Project. On October 9, 2002, WMATA and Twin Brook Commons LLC executed a joint development agreement for a long-term lease of the 26.3-acre joint development site. During the entitlement process for this site, the City of Rockville requested that a portion of the project be set aside for ownership housing instead of all rental, as contemplated in the joint development agreement. On April 22, 2005, the WMATA board authorized staff to negotiate a restructuring of the agreement so that any increased project density achieved during the entitlement process would be utilized to meet the sale housing requirement requested by the City of Rockville. WMATA and Twin Brook Commons LLC have now agreed on a revised terms that will allow approximately one-third of the site to be sold for sale housing components. Financial terms for WMATA are substantially improved over the 2002 agreement. The revised project will have approximately 1,595 residential units, 325,000 square feet of office space, and up to 220,000 square feet of retail space. The design is an outstanding example of transit-oriented development. I move approval.
Motion, we have a second. Seconded by Mr. Smith. Any discussion on this item? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Approval of the Adams-Morgan Partnership Study. The Adams-Morgan U Street Link shuttle bus service between the Woodley Park and U Street State, actually it's Woodley Park, Adams-Morgan Zoo, and U Street Afro-American Civil War Memorial Station. I think that's the longest in the system. So, is that the longest? I hope it is.
It's Cardozo as well.
Cardozo.
I forgot Cardozo. I never forget Cardozo.
I did there. Anyway, between these two stations has been experiencing somewhat low ridership. The District of Columbia has asked that $150,000 of its WMATA TIF monies be allocated to a two-phase study to be conducted by the Adams Morgan Partnership to improve ridership. Phase one will utilize $50,000 to determine why the link has low ridership and identify the changes needed to increase that ridership. Phase two will utilize $100,000 to implement a marketing effort to stimulate public interest and increase ridership. The General Manager, Chief Executive Officer, will negotiate an MOU with the Adams Morgan Partnership to conduct both phases of the project. This allocation, of course, as with all TIF allocations, is subject to FTA approval. I move approval.
Motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Mack. Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Graham.
And finally, the Real Estate Committee met in executive session on July 7th. What is this? Yeah, that's right. On July 7th and voted to recommend board consideration of the following item. Approval of a term sheet for the sale of approximately 3.75 acres of excess property at the Vienna station to the Pulte Home Corporation at a price of $6.5 million. For nearly 2 years, WMATA has coordinated with Fairfax County and the Virginia Department of Transportation to determine what improvements would be desirable if this land parcel were to be sold. If Pulte's rezoning is approved substantially as submitted, Pulte will widen Saintsbury Drive, build new bus bays, shelters and canopies, and pay for a long list of other improvements. Authorization for staff to negotiate a definitive agreement substantially in accordance with the term sheet and to close the transaction is requested. I move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Mack seconds. Is there a discussion? I'd ask the liberty of my colleagues to make a few comments on this item. Folks, every now and then you come down to an issue with people having to agree to disagree. We've heard some well-articulated articulated arguments both in support and in opposition to the proposed sale and its companion land use cases as recently as this morning. This is an important issue, so much so that for the first time, we held a public forum to air these issues and provide seats at the table for both sides. Since July, as Mr. Graham noted, we have delayed final action by this board to ensure that questions raised by everyone from neighbors to Congress could be addressed. When all is said and done, we've come down to the following major concerns. And the first is, this is a good opportunity financially for Metro. An independent appraiser assumed the maximum proposed development in establishing a value for the proposed sale. This value was determined before staff began to negotiate what all in addition we demanded from the developer to support the possible development and improved access for our current and future customers. Should this development happen, staff has secured commitments that are more than double the net appraised value of our property, that's combining the cash and the proposed improvements, more than double the appraised value. That's huge by anyone's calculations, especially in light of the recent leveling off in real estate values. These commitments include significant investments to Metro's ongoing expenses for maintaining a private road, as well as improvements that will make bus access to the station more viable and attractive option for commuters. Getting customers to freely choose to take a bus is vital to the long-term success of all of our terminal stations, particularly those in the suburbs. Finally, at my request, staff did press for a leasing option rather than a sale of the property, which is by far our preferred course of business. Fundamentally, though, it comes down to the fact that you can't develop condominiums on leased land. The second major question that was raised, certainly at our public forum, is there system capacity now and into the future to support the proposed project? Thanks to voter-approved funding for additional rail cars, train capacity on the Orange Line will increase by nearly a third at Vienna over the next 3 years. This holds even if the rate of ridership growth significantly increases over what we've seen over the past 4 years of record ridership. Also, Fairfax County staff is currently in negotiation with the prospective developer to secure funding for improvements to the station itself. And finally, there's the question, is anyone thinking ahead to how we make up for the loss of 680 parking spaces? The short answer is yes. The controversy over the loss of the so-called Sweeney lot is to me a classic case of no good deed goes unpunished. Fairfax County secured a lease from the property owner and invested tax dollars to create this temporary lot when we began construction of the second Vienna parking garage. The lot was closed when we completed construction, but reopened after 9/11 as we promoted folks to take Metro. The province district supervisor has chosen to keep the lot open as a public service. Again, this lot has never been a part of our Metro parking inventory, and we do not have total control over how this private property is used. Both Metro and Fairfax County recognize that the parking provided by this temporary lot, though, is critical to Metro use. Fairfax County staff has begun the process to replace these 680 spaces and possibly add more. Had staff from the county not begun this effort, customers were on track to lose these spaces when the special exception for the lot expires a year from now. So, appreciate my colleagues' indulgence to make those comments, and I'll also ask for the opportunity to comment again after we vote. Any other discussion? Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This was interesting. It's the first time we've, I guess, Metro had a hearing of this nature, as the one we had a few weeks ago out near Vienna. And it was very interesting for me, and I did learn a lot, as I do in our own hearings in my own jurisdiction. There clearly is a lot of, as with all these kinds of issues, when there's controversy, there tends to be a lot of misinformation that also goes around. And hopefully that's an opportunity to straighten some of that. I mean, I think you just pointed to one of them, that there's a perception that Metro is giving away parking when, in fact, the parking involved isn't on the Metro property in question in any case. But I think that there's also some misunderstanding that continues about Metro's role in these things. Assumption, both and sometimes by advocates for development near transit stations and by opponents, that it's mostly about Metro, that it's mostly a Metro decision, that Metro is deciding all these things. When Metro mostly isn't, and I suggested at the hearing that probably most people would rather Metro didn't, and that the should be understood that the system we have is that land use decisions are basically made by the people closest to those communities, most directly elected in those communities. And there can be arguments that we shouldn't do it that way, that should be imposed at a higher level or something, but I'm not sure that that's really what the people would want who are, in some cases, asking, say, me to intervene to help stop something from happening in another jurisdiction. And I think that sometimes was misunderstood. Again, I don't know whether I was successful at all in explaining that on that particular evening. And I heard a comment, from one person who's obviously concerned about the development, about balkanization. And I think that's a misunderstanding. The idea here is the laws in each of our jurisdictions establish land use policy and vest them in specific officials chosen locally. And those are probably the people that ought to be making those decisions. Part of what is often has been misunderstood about this is the role of the Metro property. This is a development that is something on the order of 56 acres, I think.
53.
Of which less than 4 acres is Metro land. So it's a fairly substantial area, and it is understandable that any jurisdiction of development of that side would engender controversy and would have a lot of legitimate concerns about that. But it's important to understand that the bulk of that is nothing to do with Metro. And it does seem to me that if there's any result that would make no sense, it would be for 50 acres of private land to be developed near a Metro station, and the only part not to get developed be the 3.5 acres closest to the station. And I can't see any way that would be a good thing for anybody. So that alone, I think, has to weigh in our consideration of this. Whatever's going to happen, which is largely determined by the community in which this resides, do we make it better or worse with our 3.75 acres? And it just seems to me those are the acres that you most want to be part of an integrated development, whatever you think. I was also struck, Mr. Chairman, by the variation in viewpoints that often comes through in a hearing. Again, you know, I probably shouldn't have been surprised because that's what happens in my community too. But when you see the newspapers, when you know most of what you hear through the newspapers, you know, it tends to be kind of cartoonish. And I think when you go with these hearings and listen to people, you get more respect for people on all sides of the issue. But you do also appreciate that there are a lot of subtleties in there. In their concerns and their viewpoints that are often lost in sort of media reports. And one of the things that struck me was that there is clearly a community nearby that is very concerned. And, you know, we heard from, I appreciate their concerns. But we also did hear from residents who live nearby on the other side, actually closest to this, who were very supportive. I noticed that the newspaper, again, quoted the head of the Chamber of Commerce for it. But while we were there, although we heard from him, we also heard from quite a few residents who were for it, who live nearby. It doesn't mean they're right and, you know, somebody else is wrong, but it does show that it's a much more complex question. In the end, I do believe that the decisions about how you make something like this work in a way that will be respectful of the residents who are already there and integrate with surrounding development and with our transportation system is best done by the people who know that community best. And I do have a great deal of confidence in both my colleagues from the Fairfax Board who happen to serve here, and also those who don't serve here but are very much interested in this, in particular Supervisor Smith and Chairman Connolly, all of whom have been, you know, very close to this project and all these issues. And I have a lot of confidence that they're going to do everything necessary to make this work as well and to be a good outcome for the people of that community. And I think we have to respect their decision. So, Mr. Chairman, it is my pleasure to support the motion that is before the board.
Any other comment, Ms. Hudgens?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank Mr. Zimmerman for his comments because it does kind of go back to much of our discussion that was held at the public hearing. And I think the last comments really have to do about how and when and is there the opportunity to listen to the concerns of the citizens. I guess the reminder here is while this is a motion that deals with the sale of the land that is Metro, and it is truly not the land use decision that we are responsible for, and that we're able to deal with the fact that that discussion in terms of land use will go on continuously until that process is over at some point in next year. And that some concerns that have been raised that were not relative to what we are doing here today still have their opportunity and will continue to be addressed with Ms. Smith in working with the community and in coming before the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission. So I think that should be kept in mind, that this is not the end of discussions that we will have, and that they appropriately will be in the local jurisdiction.
Ms. Mack?
I'd just like to make a comment because I did second the motion, and I just wanted to reiterate what has already been said about deferring to the jurisdiction on land use decisions. As a member of the board, it is important that we understand that the communities in which these properties exist really are the ones who should be making the decisions about how the land is used, and often it is the elected officials who have that weighty responsibility to make those decisions. And there are other processes within the jurisdictions, as we certainly have in the district with zoning and other bodies that get to make opinions and get to hear what citizens have to say on these types of land use decisions. So my support is simply a general support that the these decisions should be made not by the Metro Board but by those responsible within the jurisdictions who are to carry out those actions.
Thank you, Ms. Mack. Anyone else? All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye, and the motion carries. Before I recognize Ms. Mack for report of the Budget Committee, I just ask my colleagues further indulgence to speak with just my Fairfax County hat on. Just because this board has acted to include the property in the potential development mix does not mean the project as it now exists is a done deal. I acknowledge the same civil, responsive dialogue that we began here at Metro has to continue within the community. The developer needs to further refine his project to ensure that it truly does adhere to the transit-oriented development goals we have all embraced. Also, the county, Fairfax County, must be frank with the citizens we represent when it comes to defining the big picture. Where is Fairfax County heading one land use case at a time? If we are to be setting a path to take advantage of urban area opportunities, we need to be upfront with folks about what that means and get their input on how best to emulate the successes of some of our sister jurisdictions. At the same time, we must recognize and preserve the best of Fairfax County as we know and love it. For instance, I think we need to come to agreement, that is the county, on how some countywide policy and standards, developing some countywide policy and standards for transit-oriented development and to address their cumulative impact. Finally, I think we need to heal some wounds. So with that, Mrs. Mack, report by the Budget Committee.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, having not yielded the floor on the Real Estate Committee, let me raise a question concerning all, particularly the comments that you've just made. This motion regarding Pulte is not contingent the way it is drafted, and perhaps we can have counsel comment on this, is not contingent on this overall development going forward. And I have consistently opposed selling our land to developers for the purposes of them land banking it for future purpose. This proposal, and I'm subject to, if I need to be corrected on this, I want to be corrected, because this is just these comments that have just been made raise this question in my mind. This proposal, as I understand it, is contingent on the overall development. We are not selling this land just for the purposes of disposing the land. And so I need some clarification on just where this rests before I yield the Real Estate Committee report.
The action before you is not contingent. The actual letter of intent itself has contingencies in it, and if it's the board's direction, we can make sure that the ultimate agreement is contingent on the overall project going forward.
I think in the interest, thank you very much for that clarification. In the interest of that clarification, I think we should incorporate that into our motion, because otherwise we're just in the process. We would just simply be selling land that doesn't fit in the context of an overall development plan.
Need a motion to reconsider.
I will move to reconsider.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Yes.
Can we not simply make that additional direction to staff?
I would be more comfortable speaking as the chairman of this committee that this was incorporated into the resolution.
Mrs. Hudges.
Just a clarification. Ms. O'Keefe, you said the term sheet has actually what Mr. Graham is asking, and what Mr. Graham is simply saying that we make this particular action consistent with the term sheet? Is that what you're asking?
The term sheet or letter of intent does have contingencies in it for both WMATA and the developer. Again, they're not completely explicit that the deal will absolutely not go forward at WMATA's instance if the project doesn't occur. So again, we can, with the board's direction, make certain that the final agreement, again, what's in place now is a letter of intent, it's non-binding, but we can make certain that the ultimate agreement contains that explicit contingency. There are a number of contingencies on both sides in a letter of intent.
I don't think, Mr. Chairman, that's what I heard you say, and I don't place a great deal of reliance or certainty on a letter of intent, and so that's why I think if it is our purpose here to have this fit into an overall scheme, and if it isn't fitting into an overall scheme, we should then have at least have the opportunity to review it again to make sure what we're doing. But the way this motion is currently drafted, the way I read it, and again, if I'm wrong, correct me, is that we're selling this land to Pultec.
Letter of intent has a right of repurchase for WMATA if the project does not go forward. What I understand you to be saying is that you do not want the sale to occur at all if the project is not, if the overall project is not approved.
I want to have, if I may, Mr. Chairman, at least the opportunity to have another look at this. If major circumstances are different than what our assumptions are in this particular proposal.
Mr. Graham, I would not support us having another look at it, but I would support what I heard is the intent of your action, that should the Fairfax County Board not approve the case, then we would have the opportunity to have the land come back to us. Okay. That I would support, but not trotting it back up before the Metro Board. I don't think that would serve value.
Well, I think what you've suggested, Mr. Chairman, suits my purposes here.
And in fact, the letter of intent is drafted in that way now, that if the overall project does not occur, then WMATA has the right to repurchase the land.
Purchase. Not repurchase. That's not what we're talking
same
about.
Price.
Yeah. Same price.
Giving their money back.
Yes.
Their money's
there. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr.
So are you saying that's the way it is anyway?
But the letter of intent is now drafted.
Letter of intent.
We don't have a final agreement yet.
Okay, what I'm saying is we've actually voted on this. So the question is whether we need to reconsider and incorporate this. If you're telling me that's already there anyway, then perhaps we don't need any further action.
Let me just be clear. The letter of intent provides for the property at WMATA's option to come back to WMATA. What I thought Mr. Graham was saying was that he did not want the sale to occur at all. In other words, the expectation now is the sale will go forward, and if the overall project is not approved, WMATA can get the property back.
That's the same thing, which seems to me that was what Mr. Graham was originally asking, and that maybe the answer to his question was affirmative in the first place. I mean, I would ask whether Mr. Graham thinks that that's sufficient or whether we need to do something different.
Well, let me try this just a little bit differently. The motion before us is to approve the motion that we passed. The motion that we passed was the approval of a term sheet. Does the term sheet have as one of its terms the fact that if this overall development does not go forward, then we have the ability or we have the opportunity to repurchase at the same price?
Yes, it does have that provision.
That is in the term sheet?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so then I think you've made your point, Mr. Okay. Zimmerman. That was not what I got as the first answer to my question.
I gather that, yeah.
So with that clarification, then there's no need to reconsider. I withdraw the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith.
Unfortunately, it has fogged the issue in my mind. Is the issue of regaining the property contractual?
It's in the letter of intent now, and when there is a final definitized agreement, it will be in that agreement, yes.
It will be in the contract from our perspective.
Yes, it's an absolute right to reapply.
That we're going to sell the property, and you use the term repurchase.
At the same price.
And it'll definitely be at the same price coming back. We're not going to get schnookered here.
Same price.
We have been schnookered before, I believe. So, okay. Thank you.
Real estate.
Never.
Never in real estate.
Never, I'm sure.
Oh, Mr. Deegan. You've been a good guy today.
I've been a good guy. I really have.
Yes, sir.
Is there a time limit on this?
There isn't one in the letter of intent, but we certainly will have it in the final agreement, yes.
Mrs. Mack.
Thank you. Report of the Budget Committee. The following actions were referred to the board by the Budget Committee. One was to reprogram funds for a contract to maintain bus destination signs. we will complete purchase of new destination signs, I believe in January of next year. And of course, once we get all these good functioning signs, they have to be maintained. We had put funds in the budget for 2006 for this purpose, but staff recommended that we do a contract to maintain the signs, and they indicate that we would get a greater efficiency from that. The committee had a discussion about whether, you know, in-house or contracting for this would be more efficient, and we accepted management's recommendation that we do a contract, but we indicated that the option years, which are attached to this contract, would be approved only, well, that the option years would have to come back to the board for approval before they could be implemented. And with that clarification on the motion, on the action, I move the board's approval.
Second. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye.
Thank you. The next item, we of course incorporated the rail car capacity study with the Planning and Development Committee. And the next item was approved by the Planning and Development Committee, but we have a budget modification for the Alexandria Yard modification. This is a reimbursable project, and so is at no cost to WMATA, but we need to amend the SAT budget to add $200,000 to complete this project. So I will move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. So any further discussion? Seeing none, we assume we're ready to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Graham.
Did we miss item number B?
No, Mr. Graham, I believe, I don't know if you were here, but planning.
Right here.
Okay.
Do you have the budget item for B?
We incorporated the budget item for B with the planning and development action because they really are one and the same. So we just voted once. Item D. Modify the on-call technical consultant services for collective bargaining. This is a request to modify the existing contract by $250,000. This contract provides technical and expert witness services to support our labor negotiations and our interest arbitration. The funds available are not sufficient to take care of the upcoming action, and so the modification is necessary. I would move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Graham. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, assume you're ready to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Chair votes aye. This is not.
Thank you. The next action item is to implement non-regional bus service from the Anacostia High School to the surrounding communities. The objective here is to provide greater access to the students leaving the high schools to return to their communities. But the service will be available for all riders, of course. And the cost of this project is $14,000, and it will be borne, or $14,000 in fiscal 06, and this cost will be borne totally by the District of Columbia. I move approval.
Second.
Motion seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Zimmerman? Oh, Ms. Mack?
In addition to those action items, we had two other issues on the agenda. One was the August financials, The year-to-date revenue exceeded the budget by $4.8 million. The greatest portion of that was through passenger revenue. The year-to-date operating expenses are on budget, but we indicated that there are price pressures from power, fuel, and utilities that that we need to watch because they're going to quite possibly have some impact on the budget. The favorable jurisdictional subsidy of $4.8 million was reflected in the report on a year-to-date basis. Staff also recommended to us that we have a more in-depth quarterly review of our budget beginning at the end of the first quarter. This means that we will continue to have our monthly updates focusing on our ridership and our other actions that or information that we require on a monthly basis, but we will begin to rely more heavily on quarterly reviews of our budget, which will include forecasts for the year and also would identify savings that may be available as those savings occur and improve our ability to forecast what's going to be remaining. So we look forward to these quarterly reviews, and we think that they will improve our overall knowledge about what's incurring in the budget. And then the other report that we had at the committee was a status report on the actions that have been taken based on the Ernst & Young study that was approved in March of 2003. And staff pointed out to us that we had sustained savings beginning in fiscal year 05 through those projected in fiscal year 07, totaling $10.9 million. So there has been some improvement based on that study, and we do predict that there will be additional approvals, additional savings in the future. That completes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Mack. Administrative actions, Mr. Zimmerman.
Chairman, it had been my intention to move, subject to unanimous consent, the approval on block of the administrative actions. However, my immediate neighbors have raised questions on four of the six. Therefore, I suggest we take them one at a time.
Darn. it's been so long since I've read these.
I know what you mean.
Okay. Item number one is to initiate and award a contract for PC personal computer maintenance.
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Mack. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Graham.
This is the one I was going to question. I mean, we are committing $2 million. I mean, is anyone else who thinks this is kind of a staggering amount of money for 3,400 personal computers? I mean, for $2 million, even over a period of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I mean, couldn't we just buy a new computers every year for everybody and throw the other ones away? I mean, this is a phenomenal expense. This is a maintenance.
Well, we have over 800 PC computers. We have an existing contract to purchase computers, and this would essentially continue with that contract with Dale.
But I mean, but personal computers at this point in time, and the prices of all of this is going down. I would have to see, to support this, I'd have to see a much greater breakdown on this, because at $360,000 a year,
Mr. Chairman, if the gentleman would yield for a moment.
I'm just trying to get some details on the expenditure.
Mr. Smith?
I originally kind of looked at the gross number and thought, wow, that's a lot of money myself. But I did some penciling here in terms of what I do with my own computer just as an independent operator for having outside independent consultants come in and deal with it. And I got to tell you, it doesn't look bad at all to me. I mean, I think it's fairly economical given the numbers of pieces of equipment we're talking about here.
There are 6,000 pieces. 3,400 PCs, 800 laptops, and 1,800 printers, plus some servers and plus some other network nodes which they maintain. And there is a detail, I would be glad to share it with you. There is a detail that the computer maintenance people, when they put this every year, they have a very detailed where all this money goes.
So you feel that, I mean, have we been spending $360,000 a year? That's what we've been spending?
Exactly. But definitely, it's a good question you ask. Well, we need to make sure you feel comfortable for that. We provide to you.
But this is all, so for $360,000 a year, we get all the maintenance we need. There's no additional charges.
I don't know.
Get the maintenance, but periodically we have to replace certain as they become.
But I mean, in terms of the maintenance, there's no. This has no cap on it. They will come as many times as we need them.
Yes.
To fix as many machines as need to be fixed.
Yes.
My understanding from Mr. Smith's quick math is this is $60 per piece.
This is what I got.
62 per piece of equipment. Mr. Tangerlini?
Yeah, I was just going to say at $60 per piece of equipment per year, I'm going to be contacting Metro about how the Department of Transportation.
So will we, Mr. Tangerlini. We're paying $125 an hour. So.
Are you?
Yes, sir.
Well, my personal computer has never needed any maintenance. for I've had it for, I think, 5 years. It has never received any maintenance whatsoever.
Yes,
the
but when it does, it'll be way more than $60. I can tell you about my experience.
24,000 emails since January the 1st, 2004.
And half of them to me.
It has never. You don't send enough emails.
Well, seeking alternative sources of revenue, I don't think we as board members should be endorsing any particular brand of equipment. So you're on the edge. Anything else, Mr. Graham? Does that satisfy your concerns? Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Item number two is the ratify a contract funding overrun and development of Metro Matters commercial paper program.
So moved.
Motion for approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith.
Can I get a little explanation on this? I am very sensitive to the words overrun and Metro Matters on the same line, and particularly since we're kind of down some staff at this point. I would like to get an explanation on that.
Yes, this particular action was for the legal services associated with doing all the transactional documents to set up the commercial paper line that supports and provides the compact requirement for available funds for Metro Matters and also provides the capability for short-term borrowing. Our initial estimate of the legal fees was based upon what we thought the various documents would be for the transaction, and we had budgeted $170,000 for that based upon proposals. As the transactions progressed, the banks with which we were dealing wanted to restructure the whole arrangement, and that caused a number of additional documents to be required to paper that transaction. Those actions were not within our original budget. We did not, given the necessity to close the deal and have this in place for the program, unfortunately, we did not have the time to come back to the board. The funding was from the 04 IRP budget, so the funding was there, but our contract amount that we had projected was exceeded, and we're seeking ratification for that.
Where does the overrun funding come from?
The overrun funding comes from the current IRP portion for the costs of the various commercial paper program.
It was charged against the 06 IRP.
Yes, it's coming from a slightly different source.
Mr.
I just want further clarification on that. So the $2 million from which the $60,000 would be drawn, what is that $2 million line for?
Overall costs of, you know, that's a good question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to that. Mark,
that is a specific line in the 06 IRP, I take.
Yes, it is, but I don't know whether it's specifically for the commercial paper costs. $2 million.
Yeah, that's that is the financing cost line item, which would cover the various fees for incident to the commercial paper facility.
$2 million set aside for 06 IRP for those financing
it's
related
not
costs.
In case we need to actually issue debt, that's the overall budget amount for it.
We've drawn none, and this is the first time we're drawing on it. So this $60,000 would leave $1,940,000 still in that line item.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Angelini.
I'm sorry, I was on item three, or are we still doing item two? Sorry. My concern was on item three.
We're not moving quickly today.
Any other comments on item two? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Item
three is the initiating award of contract for bus stop information program. I'd entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Tangerlini.
Thank you very much. It's another $360,000 item. These things seem to be tripping us up this morning. But I noticed that if you look in the narrative discussion, it talks about the fact that the current work is supposed to be done as part of a deal with Viacom at no cost to the authority. And that based on experience over the past 5 years, the program provided under this contract has proven inadequate. And then the item before us today is an interim measure to ensure the accuracy of information in existing cases. I'm a big fan of the improving the information, the quality of the information, but I'm also a big fan of making sure that people are giving us something that they're supposed to under contract. So I'd just like to hear from staff if the problem we're facing here is simply Viacom not delivering what they're contractually obligated to deliver us. And second of all, if we're moving forward to a new program, which I think we should, a comprehensive bus shelter program that would include this information, and this is an interim measure, why is it proposed for a base year plus two option years? Because that sounds a little bit more than interim to me.
Yes. Mr. Tanglerini, I'll take both of those questions. On the second question, if you will recall, Edward and Takas and a number of people from Takas's shop came forward several months ago to bundle a variety of bus improvement items into one great big program. Now, that big program will probably take some time to go through a procurement process because of its complexity. Our experience shows that, you know, those complex procurements will probably take longer because the proposers, if nothing else, will have questions, and that will take a while. The intent is to write this procurement that's in front of you today in such a way that the authority can escape from it once the new procurement is in place and the implementation schedule for the different parts of it are up and running and developed. So rather than wait for this other item to come to fruition, we felt that we wanted to address the cases as soon as possible because of the importance that they have for our customers. That is why it's written like this. In terms of your first question, about Viacom, that is a that contract is a $30 million annual guarantee at this point. There is escalation throughout the next couple of years. It's a 10-year contract that we negotiated at the height of the dot-com, excitement, and the numbers were quite high. Viacom, at no cost to us, added this part during the procurement process. We felt that was advantageous to the authority. Now, that program is huge, and it has, in fact, grown to some degree since this was originally this contract was originally negotiated. So there is a little bit of an issue of scope here. as well as we learned a lot about doing a no-cost, combining a revenue and a cost contract in one thing. What we're weighing here is looking at the fact that there is a great deal of revenue coming into the authority, looking into not being quite clear about what the expectations were. And this is a huge, as you well know, huge program, and there is a lot of maintenance involved with it. Not only do we change out the schedule four times a year, but also on a daily basis as schedules change or cases for whatever reason break, etc. So what our intent to do is to focus Viacom on a smaller segment of the cases and get this up.
I guess my only concern would be it sounds like we're changing the terms in the Viacom deal to favor Viacom, saying yes, we understand it probably grew bigger than you estimated when you made the bid. In construction projects, that's called change order, and we end up paying for it. I think it's interesting that in this instance, it's called a scope change, and we end up paying for it. I think it's something that perhaps if we move forward, and we probably should as a way to ensure that the high quality of information is provided to our users, it's one of the big glaring omissions, frankly, in our system, we should go back to Viacom and get them to chip in on this, because in essence we're relieving some of their responsibility I think they bid on and probably beat one or two other companies to gain.
Our intent is to do that.
Mr. Zimmerman? And now I feel somewhat as perhaps Mr. Smith felt earlier, that I know less now than I did before. Can I get this straight? Are we being asked now to contract out something for which Viacom is contractually obligated to us and is not performing the job?
Yes. In short, yes. There is the scope, as I said, you know, there are more cases that are involved than there were when this originally came forward. The intent is to limit the scope of what Viacom has now in the contract and to impose.
Getting better for me. This isn't getting better
okay.
for me. So let me try asking it a different way.
Okay.
Why don't we say to Viacom, you're not doing your job you signed a contract for, do your job?
We could do that. We could find them in default of the contract, for example.
And I'm asking you, are they in fact in default of the contract?
If I could,
if that's the answer, if the answer is yes, we can make them do it, then Mr. Tangalini's got a point. It's a choice between paying $360,000 to somebody else or getting the people who we've told to do it. And I thought I had understood something different. I thought I understood something was about whether or not we, in fact, define what they should do, and we're getting a lot of money from them, but we really didn't
specify
this, so they're maybe not obligated.
And that is a very complex issue, the question of how well did we define what we were going to do, and then the other part of the question is the question of the $30 million of revenue coming in annually to the authority.
I could stop here.
If I can just finish up. If on the one hand what we're saying is we bid this thing out and we got a really good price, we maybe didn't do as well in defining what we wanted, so we didn't get as much service in the contract as we wanted, but it's still probably a good deal for us because we got so much money.
Right.
So we might as well use some of that to get some of the service that we might otherwise have put in the contract. That's one thing. That's the way I understood
okay.
it, and I would support that.
Yes.
If what you're saying is, well, these guys are really supposed to do it, but they're not doing it, so we're going to go and pay somebody else, then I have a lot of problem with that. So I need to know which of these is the situation.
Number one, the first one you described.
And really, the issue is because of the guarantee in the contract for the revenue, a guarantee which they're actually having a problem achieving, we still get the revenue irrespective. And at the time it was bid.
Yeah, but if they overbid and they're losing money,
yeah.
You know, I don't have a handkerchief today. But Viacom losing some money on us because they overbid is frankly not my problem. And they're not likely to go out of business. So if they're contractually obligated, then Mr. Tangley's right, make them do it. If it's a matter of, you know, well, we didn't specify all these things because we were mostly thinking about the money, and so we got a good money deal, and we, you know, can feel smart. It's one thing we won on a little bit, and we want to spend some of that money to get some services that we need, that I can. But I need to be real clear that that's what you're saying is the situation.
Yes, it is.
That is an affirmative.
Yes.
Mayor Lini?
I just may comment quickly. I didn't understand that to be the case. In fact, I understood it to be the case that it was Viacom's responsibility to maintain this information. They simply aren't, or at the level we expect, at the high level, if you read the document, at the high level that the authority is established, and that, in fact, we've been growing the amount of information, and so that they have an equitable adjustment claim, perhaps, to suggest that we've changed the scope on them. In that sense, I think maybe the best policy is for us to pursue moving forward on this proposal and then seeking a legal clarification with Viacom and perhaps seeking some remedy from them. And I understand your concern of jeopardizing the overall $30 million contract. If we find them in fault, they may be more than happy to say, you're right, we're in fault. We therefore default our entire contractual obligation if in fact they're losing as much money as they claim to be losing. I've never met a contractor who's told me they've been making money on any project I've worked with them on. So,
I agree with you.
Yeah, right. So, and yet they all seem to have nice houses and big cars. So I just think that maybe there's a smart way to pursue this, but I don't think simply letting Viacom off the hook is the strategy.
Angelini, do you have an unreadiness to proceed with this item today?
Well, I don't get to vote, so all I do is get to raise questions.
Yeah, but
you don't get off that easily.
Nice try,
no,
huh?
No, you don't.
I would suggest that we do proceed with providing this information in this form, but that we also use this. We use the amount of money now that we will determine that a contractor is going to charge us to provide this service to go back and seek an adjustment from Viacom.
So you would, Mr. Chairman, if I may. You're suggesting that we do go ahead and award the contract as staff is requesting, but that we also go back to Viacom.
Absolutely, because the simple fact is not providing this information to our customers is worse than finding ourselves in this deal.
Mr. Chairman, I have great respect for the fact Mr. Tangley is one of the few people here, you know, he has to run a department and does a lot more of this than I do. So I'm inclined to take his advice on this.
Hey, Mr. Gray.
I think, can we just put this off and find out where we are? I move to postpone this to the next meeting.
Is there any difficulty in terms of, is there any immediacy associated with this item such that we would preclude us deferring it today? Can we defer it for a month?
Yes, we can do that.
President of the Operations Committee.
That's not the motion. We can do things at the board level. I mean, why don't we just defer it for till the next board meeting, and then you can have fuller information available to us at that time.
And could I add to the request for the fuller information? I notice here that our MEAD tells us that we approved this contract in our fiscal year 06 budget. I wonder how that was explained to us at that time. I mean, do we know that the right, that the situation is as it is, but just research that and see how that was presented to us.
We'll do that.
All right, we will defer, hearing no objection. We'll defer this item to the next board meeting. Next, we have the award of option years 1 and 2 for executive search consulting services.
So moved.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Chairman.
Moved and seconded. And Mr. Smith.
I have questions on this issue. What is this, a continuation of the same company?
There are three multiple contracts.
And do we have record? I mean, what has our success rate been in terms of applicants they've sent to us and ratio of people we've actually hired to those? What is that?
The three hires that we had recently was for general counsel, the DGM, CFO, and the managing director of property development and management.
And all of those came to us directly out of this service?
Yes, they did.
And is it staff and management's analysis that without the $300,000 annually we're paying for this service, we would not have found those people?
Yes, that's our belief.
And for the same position, let me just ask, for the same positions that we have this search firm working on, do we post ads for those positions in journals or in the local...
Generally, we try to recruit before we go to the executive search firm.
How much, and I have no idea because I don't really have any number of employees beyond my partner and myself, how much does one charge or does one pay for ads in print journals and local media for personnel?
Just with the Washington Post alone, $11,000 per ad.
$11,000 per ad?
Yes, for an ad. Yes.
$11,000 per ad.
But that's got to be some fancy executive type ad or something.
I mean, is that a full pay? I mean, how much of an ad is that?
I'm just saying that for the ads that we usually use for executive level positions, they run us, if we're putting in a Sunday paper and it's got all of our Metro insignia and everything, they run about $11,000.
It covers the valet services for the reporting corps.
Yeah, I've got that down. Okay, thank you.
And Mrs. Mack.
I have a question on this action as well. And I'm concerned that we are being asked to approve two option years, fiscal 07 and 08. That sort of kind of contravenes the need to have the option years approved by the board. So I would move that we just approve the one option year and not two. My second, and the reason I'm suggesting that is I would really like to get some idea of the performance that we get if we're saying that in fiscal 2006 we got three people as a result of the work of these firms. They were $100,000 apiece. That's pretty high. Maybe it's not. But I'd be interested in knowing some details on the usage before I would be interested in approving a contract for the extension for fiscal 08.
Didn't use. We still had $35,000 left for out of the $300,000, so we didn't use a full $300,000.
Oh, okay. That was for fiscal 06. Okay. I would.
So that'd be a substitute motion.
Yes.
Be for 1 year only. Is there a second to the substitute?
Second.
It's been seconded. Any discussion on the substitute, Mr. Lynn?
It's my understanding that the options years are option years, which means that even as the contract is presented to us today, that you could always choose to use one option year, correct?
Well, Jim, if we need it.
You only use it if you need it. So if you have it in the contract, that does not obligate you to go into the second year. It's only that the contract as an option year will allow you to do that if you choose
Bob,
to do
you
so.
You will never see it again, Mr. Linton. If you approve these 2 years, you'll see it in 2009. So I'm just suggesting that we just have it come back. Let's take another look at it in 2008.
Any other discussion on the substitute? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. The motion carries. That now becomes the main motion. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries. Next. Approval to execute service and license agreement containing indemnification provisions with Washington Gas for the Montgomery bus.
So moved.
The motion, is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries. Initiate and award contracts for the consolidated non-revenue vehicle procurement.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Chairman. Zimmerman. Mr. Smith.
Can I have an explanation as to why the budget item on this is the Largo extension?
Largo, I don't remember the number. I think it's about $200,000, Mr. Smith.
$90,000.
How much?
$90,000
was from the original budget to buy the extra vehicles for maintenance later. It's a line item in the budget called work equipment, and the federal government authorizes that. When we put the budget together, the projects pay different accounts for equipment for maintenance, and one of those items is here.
beginning of the discussion, Mr. Smith, it speaks to the additional vehicles will be used. Two of the vehicles will be used by plant to support maintenance, landscaping, and snow removal requirements. One vehicle is for rail transportation. That's the Largo vehicles.
The two vehicles for Largo?
Three vehicles total.
Three vehicles for Largo?
Yes, sir.
And they're effectively $30,000 vehicles at that point. So.
And if you go back to the meet, Mr. Smith, I my memory was okay. The budget on the Largo project was $200,000 for work equipment, and this action is only $90,000.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Final items, the reports by NVTC. Ms. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, I have no reports other than the fact that the NVTC will be getting a report back on this dedicated funding at the December meeting.
District of Columbia, Mrs. Mack.
No report, Mr. Chairman.
WSTC, Mr. Deegan.
WSTC does have one item to announce, sadly. Andy Scott, the director of area of transit programs for the WSTC, has left the agency to seek his fortune at the Board of Trade. And I would just like to say Andy Scott is probably the finest public official I've met in my whole career. He's one outstanding individual, and we're going to miss him here at WSTC and certainly at WMATA, too.
Yep.
But hopefully he'll do, I'm sure he'll do just as well at the Board of Trade.
Is he still with us?
No. He's already at the Board of Trade.
All right. Well, I think we all share your high opinion of him, sir. Any other comments? Okay. I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss legal and personnel matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6.2 and 6.3. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. We are adjourned.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Hi, Lisa.
It gets better.
Oh.
Okay.